Hey, it's Mike Salk here. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk podcast. This episode is brought to you by Famous Dave's. That's America's favorite barbecue. To find a Famous Dave's near you, go to famousdaves.com.
Get me a freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
So opening day just 2 days away, Brock. We are kicking things off with Jeff Passan here in a half hour. Our weekly conversation with Jeff shall return as of today. I saw something this morning from The Athletic. So this guy, Tim Britton, who's been a writer... I don't know, forever he's been around, but Tim took on quite the project. He looked at all 30 teams in baseball and came up with a historical comp that shows a path for them to make the World Series. Does that make sense?
Wow.
A historical comp that gives them a path to the World Series. So he found a team in history that they that this current team reminded him of, and showed how that team made the World Series and how if the current team follows the same path, they could make it as well. Does that make sense?
He didn't do that for all 30 teams.
He did it for all 30 teams.
Well, there's no path for Oklahoma.
No, there's not. But I don't know, he must have found like the
team for
Miracle
Major
Mets.
Bless his heart.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Miracle Mets. I don't know what he used. I didn't read all the way through it. But gotcha. I did read the Mariners. So the Mariners are projected to be an 85 win team. 85 and 77.
Mm-hmm.
His historical team, any guesses on what it is? Can you think of one off the top of your head? It's a really hard assignment, but if by any chance off the top of your head, is there a team that jumps out to you as being very, very similar to this current Mariner team?
Sure, the 22 Mariners.
Yeah, it's not that one. It's not the one he went to.
Think great pitching.
Yeah. Well, this team did have some pretty great pitching. His historical comp is the 2012 Detroit Tigers, who were projected to win 86 games, ended up winning 88 games, and went to the World Series. He writes, You look back now with all that we know, and the pitchers comprising that Detroit rotation in 2012 are about as accomplished as it gets. I mean, outside of the Detroit rotation in 2014. Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer each have 3 Cy Young Awards. Wow. Fifth starter Rick Porcello has his own Cy Young Award. Anibal Sanchez led the league in ERA and seriously flirted with a no-hitter in the LCS twice. And Doug Fister received Cy Young Award votes. Though not yet established, that rotation and a top-heavy lineup carried the Tigers to an AL Central crown and a pennant. It's actually a pretty good comp. He says, you would not bet on any current rotation in baseball accomplishing that level of collective career success, but if you had to pick one, you'd pick Seattle's pretty swiftly. Luis Castillo remains underrated. George Kirby's made an all-star team, and Logan Gilbert sure could. And Bryce Miller and Brian Wu each had promising rookie seasons. Pair that with Julio Rodriguez in your lineup, and you don't have to squint too much to see a pennant winner or more. Hmm. That's a really, really great comp.
So give me those. It was Verlander and Scherzer at the top.
Verlander and Scherzer. Anibal Sanchez, who's a pretty good pitcher for Florida I want to say Washington.
Little Dougie Fiston.
Yep. And Rick Porcello, who won a Cy Young Award later.
Yep.
That's pretty good. That was pretty good rotation.
Yes.
And it does kind of smell a little bit like this one does, right? You get just one or two big bats on that team. And yeah, I think it is somewhat similar to this year's Seahawks or Mariners rather. Sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot to ingest right there.
Yeah.
And I would say as well that Detroit lineup, as I'm thinking about, there's Miguel Cabrera at the top. I remember watching that team.
Yeah.
And watching them in the play, and that wasn't like nine deep.
No, not at all.
That group had some holes.
Let me tell you who's on that team. You have Miguel Cabrera, who was awesome, had 1,000 OPS that year.
Yeah.
You had Prince Fielder, who was still really, really good, hit 30 home runs for that team with a 940 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, numbers were a little bit higher than in general around baseball. But after that, they had some guys that like had pretty good years but weren't necessarily great players, right? I mean, you had... just kind of looking through it. Austin Jackson, who you may remember here when he was done at the end of his career. He was young then, only 25. He had a good year in center field. Mm-hmm. Some guy named Andy Dirks had an 857 OPS in left field. Brennan Bosch was their right fielder. Delmon Young was their DH. Johnny Peralta at short. Omar Infante was not particularly great. I mean, like, It's top heavy, man. They had two or three guys that were really good, and everybody else was very, very mediocre.
Yep.
And then you look
but
at
the pitching carried them.
And the pitching carried them. Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing I don't is I'm looking at that, though, just to compare and contrast, and it's obvious, is how young you still are. And I guess, you know, Scherzer was still younger then. And
so at the time, Verlander was 29. Yeah. He was the oldest guy in that rotation. Luis Castillo is going to pitch at 31.
Right.
Scherzer was 27. I think that's Logan Gilbert's age.
Yeah.
Porcello was 23, which is sort of in that Brian Wu, Bryce Miller era. Yeah. Yeah. And then Doug Fister was 28, as was Anibal Sanchez.
Wow.
So they're maybe a little older. But not by, like, a huge margin. By the way, they also had Drew Smyly on that team. He was only 23 and made, I don't know, 7 or 8 starts. So that's a pretty good comp.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good comp right there. You know what the biggest difference is? The Tigers didn't play in a very good division.
Yeah,
that division is not what the Mariners are going to have to get through with the Astros and the Rangers. Now, look, you may have two teams at the bottom that absolutely stink, and that could help. But I'm going to, kind of look
back. But with the balanced scheduling, you don't play them quite as many times. And
you got
to thankfully, you don't play as many against Texas and Houston either. So that does even itself out a little bit. But yes, this American League West is
it's going to
be a dogfight.
Yeah.
It's going to be a dogfight.
Yep.
So, boy, what was this guy's name? Tim what?
It's Tim Britton.
She did some serious work.
It's some serious work, right?
For all 13.
That's some serious heavy lifting going through it. It's a cool article. If you have a few minutes, go check it out. But, you know, you're going to need some depth. As I just said, I went through that rotation for the Tigers.
Yep.
And, you know, it wasn't just 5 or even 6 guys who started for them, right? I mean, you have, I think I gave you 6 right there who were sort of your primary starters, because you had Drew Smyly to that list.
Yep.
But they had a few others, of course, over the course of the year who made some starts.
So, I'm sure I'm not the only one. A text toy is going to ask the same question. So do you want to go out and get Montgomery right now? Do you want to go spend some cash that's not trade anybody, not make a move later in the year? Do you want to try to find a few more and scratch a few more nickels together and figure out and say, okay, now we saw what we saw in the spring, or maybe do you wait till this month of April and see, you know, how Emerson does in some of these starts and try to weather some of these delays?
I don't know. I don't know that I need to go get Montgomery right now. I mean, I still think you want Brian Wu pitching for your team this year with the upside and everything else. So I think you got to find out, see how these next week to 10 days goes. But I would absolutely be looking to just add some serviceable major league pitching if something is out there like that. And maybe it's your guy, Tommy Malone. I don't know. But with enough of the dudes that have walked out the door.
How is little Tommy Malone still out there?
I don't know.
I just don't get it.
Maybe because he's 6'2", not little at all. And
all that guy does is produce, man. Little Tommy Malone.
Every time he pitches for the Mariners, they seem to find a way to win the game. Yes. All right, we're a couple days away here, Brock, from opening day. Come down to the Hatback Bar and Grill Thursday for the live broadcast, Wyman and Bob, 2 to 6, celebrating the start of the Mariners season. Hatback will be hosting pregame festivities for all ages, and those begin 3 hours before first pitch with food trucks and tailgating games, music, and more. For more info, go to hatback.com. Jeff Passan with more on this in 20 minutes. Plus, have a feeling we might get into the Shohei Ohtani story with him. By the way, Shohei spoke yesterday. Hear what he had to say next on Brock and Salk.
Massive. The Power of Pop Culture is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition, featuring iconic artifacts from artists Beyonce, Nirvana, and more. Planning a trip to Washington? Make sure to include MoPop in your itinerary. Tickets and info at MoPop.org.
All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and of course, the classic cue. You know it. Digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich. Or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast. A full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, brisket or the Georgia chopped pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to famousdaves.com to learn more. That's famousdaves.com.
Cantor Diamond, greater service, greater diamond options, and greater savings. Meet us in our professional private Tacoma showroom by appointment only. CantorDiamond.com or globally by phone, email, or Instagram at K-A-N-T-O-R Diamond. Cantor Diamond, truly the best diamond prices.
The Mariners Kids Club is 100% free and a great way to get your kids excited for a lifetime of Mariners baseball. Sign up online and your youngster will receive a Kids Club hat, access to early gate opportunities, discounts, and more. Go to mariners.com/kidsclub to join.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, unfortunate news to start the day, and that is that Brian Wu is going to begin the season on the injured list, Brock. He experienced some elbow inflammation in a throwing session. Didn't feel right. Felt the soreness. Shut it down immediately. Thankfully, the MRI was negative, so it appears to just be inflammation rather than a torn ligament or any structural damage.
Yep.
But he's going to be kind of on ice here for 7 to 10 days and then would have to build himself back up. And he's had injuries before, including Tommy John surgery on that elbow 3 years ago. So, you know, this is why you have a lot of pitchers.
Yeah, you could spin it either way here. You could spin this good or bad, right? You could say, well, the good is he knows his elbow. The good is he knows his arm. He knows it better than anybody else does. And obviously, he knew what it was like when it got torn. He knew what it was like last year, Salk, with the same injury that he missed 15, 16 days, was able to get it settled down and ramp right back up and finish the season and finish with 130 innings last year.
Yeah.
An absurd amount coming from where he came from over the past. Flip side of it is, this is a recurring theme. And there's something, whether mechanically or in the delivery, that's just not sustainable, that this elbow continues to get inflamed and continues to get bothered. And can you consistently do this week in and week out for the entirety of 162 games?
Yeah, it's a challenge. Emerson Hancock didn't take his spot in the rotation. The team will have some opportunities, though, to skip that spot in April if they want to. Hancock will have to start the fifth game of the season. They play, I think it's 6 in a row or 7 in a row right away to start the year. So we will see him against the Guardians in the second week. In any event, while we're talking about pitching depth, the Mariners are just going out there and continuing to win all these exhibition games. They have two of them in San Diego, the first of which they won yesterday 4-1. Nice day for Bryce Miller, who only gave up one run. Ty France was on fire.
Here's the pitch. Swung on, line drive, right field, base hit. It just scoots past Bogarts and Cronenworth. Coming to score is Canzone, and the Mariners tack on another. It's 3-1 M's.
Yeah, that was one of his three hits on the day. Canzone was on third there because of a triple. Polanco had an RBI double. It's just another one of these good games for this lineup. They're just rolling right now.
The more guys you go through, there is a tremendous amount of curiosity factor. Canzone put on the weight and the size, and is it going to look and is it going to play out? Haniger's had an unbelievable spring. We know he can carry a team and has for stretches when he's healthy. Can Ty France get back to just being that hit collector? Just gap-to-gap guy, right, that just sprays it all over the field and hits line drive.
That would be so huge for them.
There is so many cool curiosity factors. Well, that will come to a conclusion in an end when this thing kicks off come Thursday.
Here's the second thing.
You want to talk about curiosity factors, Brock. Nothing more so than whatever is going on with Shohei Ohtani and his translator. Shohei spoke yesterday through a new translator.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports.
I mean, that's pretty clear. I didn't do it.
Yep.
I didn't bet on sports. I never used a bookie to bet on sports. I never asked anybody else to bet on sports.
You better be right.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying it very clearly and goes on to say that didn't know what was happening with the translator.
Last weekend in Korea, media has reached out to a representative in my camp inquiring about my potential involvement in this sports betting. Ipe never revealed to me that there was this media inquiry. And to the representatives in my camp, Ipe told to the media and to my representatives that I, on behalf of a friend, paid off debt.
Yeah, it's pretty confusing. He didn't answer questions, so we don't know yet how that money escaped his accounts.
Yep.
How that was able to occur. Yep. But they'll continue on it, and we'll continue to follow it. Also, Jonte Porter, you may remember the name when he was here. Michael Porter's brother. NBA is looking into some...
Not good.
Suspicious activity. Prop bets made with him on the under in a bunch of games, and he either was sick or took himself out of those games. It's pretty sketchy, I would say.
Yeah, don't like that at all.
Yeah, well, this is going to be more and more of a thing. The more and more gambling is as connected to sports and as accessible as it is now in the United States.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Kind of a catch-all here. Kraken calling up some of their young kids. Logan Morris and Ryan Winterton should make their debuts tonight.
Shane Wright?
Against Anaheim. No, not Shane. Shane's going to not come. No, they're going to bring up everybody else but Shane Wright. He's just... I don't know what's going on with Shane.
What did Shane do?
I don't know what Shane did, but it doesn't appear to be very good. That's for sure. Mike McDonald is talking at the owners' meetings today. And according to everybody who was there, he said that they are not done by any stretch, certainly in the interior of their offensive line. They hope to add more. Now, they're pretty much out of money.
$2 million on the cap.
They went from having the most or, whatever it was.
$60 million down to $2.25 million.
Yeah.
Fungible. Those numbers can be moved around somewhat. But they've eaten up a lot of their cap. So who else has got a big cap number that we got to figure some things out with? And how can we move some of these numbers and continue to move these numbers around? As Mike said, there's guys out there, and there is Lakin Tomlinson, familiar name. Seahawks competed against him a bunch over the years in San Francisco and other places. Big physical guy. There are some other guards out there, but there's not a whole lot of money left on that cap.
We'll see. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I get a text here saying, could someone explain to me why Shohei needs a translator? It seems like he speaks pretty good English. That's his new translator talking. That's not Shohei speaking. By all accounts, he does not speak great English. This is not a situation where he's choosing to use a translator, even though his English is nearly perfect. By all accounts, he doesn't. I mean, he started to pick some up. He's been here for a few years, but he is not fluent. Certainly enough to have a conversation.
Shame on me as well. Yesterday, or Sunday, they took the picture, the coach's picture down there. It's always just a highlight.
Of course.
To see the coaches gather together at the owners' meeting so we could see how much change there is every year. How many guys can we possibly name out of the 32 coaches? Shame on me for not just highlighting Mike McDonald, gun show. I mean, absolute pipes. Absolutely ripped. And it looked as good as any of those coaches. So
right, Brock. Shame on you.
Yeah, shame on you.
On me. Wow. Seriously.
Yeah.
Shame on me.
Last year, we kind of went through the whole picture and you gave body assessments.
No, not really.
No,
this is shameful.
No, I don't remember any of that.
Shameful display. Not saying anything.
Not calling out the pythons.
Andy Reid's Tommy Bahama. He's got a lot of those Hawaiian shirts. He sits right in the middle of it with his big cankles. But there's McDonald, a few spots over, looking good, feeling good. Now we're just going to coach.
Did I tell you I had a dream about you last night?
You did.
Yeah. You were playing quarterback, and I was like some sort of a coordinator or something. Damon and I were on the sideline, and we were trying to like get you through it, but you kept making the wrong throws. And I was like, maybe I was more like your agent, because I was like, no, I promise he can make these throws. He's just not making the right decisions today. I promise Brock can do better than this.
See, that's why I got to come back to my wheelhouse,
man.
You were throwing it hard, though, man, as a
lefty, but you're just putting the ball in the wrong place. Like, no, that ball's got to be thrown away. See, he's got to throw that ball away. But instead, you like put it into harm's way. Yeah.
Well, if it comes down to the gun show, if it comes down to those pythons, comes down to the pipes, Mike McDonald's winning this year.
Absolutely.
He's winning big.
All right, back to baseball. Jeff Passan will join us for the first of however many weekly conversations. We'll do it next. What's the outlook on this Mariner team? What do you do with Brian Wu injured? What's going on with Shohei? There's a lot to get to with Jeff next. I'm Brock and Salk. All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh, my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and, of course, the classic queue. You know it. Digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich. Or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast, a full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, or the Georgia chopped pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to famousdaves.com to learn more. That's famousdaves.com.
Greater service, greater diamond options, and greater savings. The only professional office for diamonds and diamond jewelry. By appointment only in Tacoma or globally by phone or email. BestDiamondPrice.com or on Instagram at KANTOR Diamond.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at QuantumFiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com. O'Brien.
The Museum of Pop Culture, Seattle's destination museum for music, film, fashion, and gaming, has savings just for Washington residents in May. See MoPop's newest exhibition, Massive, The Power of Pop Culture. Tickets at mopop.org/maycation.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It must be getting real close to the beginning of baseball season here because Jeff Passan is back for our regular Tuesday conversation. Every Tuesday at 8:30, we sit down with Jeff and get ourselves excited about the season. He's not there yet, though. We're
wonder
still
how his back is. Yeah. He's back, you know, I mean, after breaking that thing like Tyson, spinal. I wonder if that back, if he's feeling it, if he's healed, if he's ready to go, ready to carry this show again, Saul, because he does every Tuesday at 8:30.
I wonder if he's had anything to think about, talk about, write about here with the start of a baseball season, the absolute insanity around the Shohei Ohtani story. And oh, by the way, what's going on in the baseball union is an entire issue unto itself. I mean, you could spend quite some time. We probably won't spend a lot, but there is a reckoning going on in the union as well. So lots going on in the world of baseball. Jeff Passan joins us now. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I am great, gentlemen. How are you?
We're also great. Baseball is, there's all sorts of good stuff in baseball. I want to make sure we have time for all of it. So let's jump right in. 2 days away from opening day. What's your outlook on the Mariners this year?
I am very bullish on the Mariners in 2024. And I'll be honest, I flirted with picking them to go to the World Series this year. Wow. I didn't do it, but I don't think that it is unrealistic to believe that they have the talent and the ability to win a championship with this team. There are still flaws on this roster, but there are flaws on every roster. And when you have the kind of pitching that they do, particularly the kind of starting pitching that they do, it can take you a really long way. And I understand that up until this point, it hasn't, but they also haven't had a full year with the five guys that they've got. And, well, Brian Woo's starting the season on the injured list. I think the expectation is that he's going to be back and should make a, you know, pretty reasonable number of starts. And that's what this is all going to come down to, guys. If the starting pitching stays healthy, the way that it has in recent seasons, I think that the Mariners are going to be in a fantastic position, despite being in an absolute meat grinder of a division in the American League West.
Well, this is weird, Brock. I thought we were going to talk to Passan every week, but apparently it's going to be John Morosi. I'm just very surprised. The level of optimism is shocking to me. I thought we were getting Jeff Passan, and instead, Moore, did you call the wrong number? Did you call Morosi instead? What's happened here?
He sounds like Passan.
I know, but the words are very Morosi-like.
I know. It's amazing. I have hair, too. Somehow, like this, you know?
So if we were to rewind,
John's my boy, I'm sorry. He speaks a lot more languages than I do. So
sure
he's got that going for him.
If we were to rewind the clock back to this exact time last year, a couple days before the opener, when we had you on for the first time, were you as bullish in 23 as you seem to be in 24?
No. And I think that's in large part because not just of the moves they made this winter, which remember, like early on in the winter, it was a nightmare for Mariners fans. You know, Jared Kelnick had been traded in essentially a salary dump. Gino Suarez had been traded essentially in a salary dump. And still, when you look at the Mariners payroll for this upcoming season, it is not where it should be. Like it's very simple. They are in a special window right now, and this is when you add, and I still don't think that they've added to the extent that they could have or should have, but this is the reality that they're dealing with right now. And when you objectively look at this roster and who they have, I think that Julio Rodriguez has as good of a chance as anyone to win the MVP award in the American League this year. I think that Cal Raleigh is really going to cement himself as one of the best catchers in the big leagues. I think that J.P. Crawford has the ability to turn around and be a five-win player again like he was last year. And bringing in Jorge Polanco and adding a bat like Mitch Garver and, Mitch Haniger 2.0 in Seattle, like, you know, we've got things that, to me, make this a better team than it was last season.
Let's focus on Julio for a moment. Year three for Julio. By the way, I totally agree with your take that he seems to be poised for an MVP kind of a season.
Can I just interrupt? I'm working on a Julio story right now that's going to be so cool, and I'm so excited for it.
Give us a hint? Anything?
No, I don't want to do that. I want it to be a surprise because I want Mariners. It's a good story.
Cool.
This is not going to be about $4.5 million being stolen from his bank account.
Good. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Good. He just has everything put together so well for somebody who's 23 years old. Like, he just gets it. And I think that there comes that point in every player's career where their mental game matches up to their physical game. And that's when we see the absolute apex of what they can be. And I think this is the year that that happens for Julio Rodriguez, which is kind of frightening considering how good he's been in his first two seasons already, Mike.
Is year three sort of a typical season for a player to put everything together?
I don't have anything objective to back that up. In my head, and having covered this game 20 plus years, that sounds right. It's almost like you've shaken off the doldrums of a rookie season, and you've gotten through that sophomore year that can be so difficult for some guys, and you're almost a veteran by that third year. And it's silly to say that about someone who's 23 years old, that they're a veteran at this point, but you understand not just the rigors of the game and what it takes to succeed, but you're starting to mature and understand your place in it as well, and your place inside of a clubhouse that increasingly is going to be turning toward you to be a leader and to be a central figure. You know, you're not the young guy anymore. You're not green in that third year. Like, you were established at that point. And I suppose the contract that the Mariners gave Julio Rodriguez cemented him in that place. But it's more about, I think, accepting and acknowledging that place rather than it being foisted on you because of a dollar figure, because of the number of years you're going to be around.
Okay, Jeffrey, give me realistic expectations for Julio in 24. Give me unrealistic expectations.
Oh, man. Realistic expectations. I don't think it is. I'm going to look at rate stats, right? I think that he's going to hit somewhere in the 280, 290 range. I think he's going to get on base at least 35% of the time, and I think he's going to slug, you know, 525 minimum. I think the power is going to really pick up this year. And unrealistic, 45. Like, I could see him hitting 45 home runs this year. I could see him stealing 45 bases this year. That is at the edge, you know, that's 95th percentile projection right there. Mm-hmm. But I do not discount anything with him. And it goes back to that combination of physical with the growth of mental. I think he's finally beginning to understand who he is and where he fits into this, not just place in Seattle and anchor of the Mariners franchise, but in the entirety of Major League Baseball. Like, he's one of the guys now. He's one of the guys who everyone in the sport is going to look at and say, I wish I were him. And I think instead of cowering from it or shying away, he embraces it and runs with it.
A couple more on the Mariners, and then I definitely want to make sure we have some time to ask you about the biggest national story here in baseball. But, you know, kind of talking through the need for their pitching to stay healthy. I agree with you. If they're healthy, they're an unbelievable pitching staff. But already we're seeing, you know, Brian Wu go to the injured list, and we'll see how long this takes. Hopefully it's just, you know, the 10 or 12 days they're talking about. But you kind of look through it, and in the last few years, Jeff, all the guys they've either graduated or traded – Kirby, Miller, Wu, Gilbert, Brash, plus trading Williamson and Levi Stout. I mean, that's like seven or eight guys that they've all brought up through their system. And now there's not like a tremendous amount of depth left in the high minors. What do you do if...
I don't know, man. If you can fill in with Emerson Hancock in that spot, you're doing okay.
He's the one.
And if you can pop a guy like Logan Evans... toward, and for those unfamiliar with Logan Evans, he was an average college starter, mm-hmm. I believe the Mariners took in the seventh round last year. He was a later round draft pick, and I got a text from somebody from a scout this spring who said, "Do you know who Logan Evans is?" And I said, "No, should I?" And he said, "Yes, absolutely. He's on the backfields with the Mariners, like sitting 99." And that's, you know, that's why I'm as bullish on the Mariners guys as I am. It's not just the talent that they've got in the big leagues right now. It's a sustained ability to draft, find internationally, and develop guys. And, man, the things that I've heard this spring about Johnny Farmello and Colt Emerson, two of their three first-round picks last year, these are guys who could both be top 25 prospects by the time the year is over.
Yeah. So you don't think they need to go out and acquire another pitcher?
No. Do you?
Not necessarily. Not like a big name pitcher, but, you know, those sort of 4A types of guys that just sort of help you get through a season.
I mean, but that's not going to cost anything. Like that's not a difficult guy to find. And, you know, if they can scratch together a little coin, Mike Clevenger's still out there as well. Like,
oh, no.
There are options.
I refuse to watch Mike Clevenger pitch for any amount of time. I'm out. That's a non-starter.
That's Okay, fine, whatever. My point is there are guys who are available and they will not cost a whole lot to get. And so if, you know, I think if there's another injury, maybe that's something you consider. And it's you know, normally I wouldn't suggest that for a team. But when you're in a division with the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, every win's going to count. And I do think all three of them are playoff teams this year, but it is going to be health dependent all the way around. And the Astros rotation is, you know, about as banged up as any out there these days. You know, Justin Verlander is going to start the year on the injured list. Luis Garcia is going to be out for half the season. Lance McCullers out for half the season. Jose Urquidy has an elbow problem. Like, there's a lot of issues right now with the Astros, and that's something that it's why I think a good start, it's not a necessity, but it would be a really nice luxury for the Mariners to start off hot.
Is Polanco good?
Polanco's really good, yes.
Can you give me some assurance, a Mariners fan, some assurance he's not Colton Wong?
I think Jorge Polanco at his peak was much better than Colton Wong at his peak, and I look at you know, he's 30 years old, like he's still in the prime of his career, late prime at least, and I do not anticipate that Jorge Polanco, when you look at the consistency of his bat, the big question with him has always been, is he going to stay on the field? He had a spectacular season in 2021. And since then, I think he's played 100 games and 80 games in back-to-back seasons. If he is out on the field, he's a genuine 30 home run threat. Probably going to be likelier in the 20s, but it's still the type of bat that plays in a championship lineup. Yeah.
It's pretty good, and it sure seems to be a lot of doubles in there as well, as the Mariners have kind of made a switch away from sort of the boomer bust three true outcome guys and seem to be looking for a little bit more contact. We'll see if that works, and something tells me that's
why Patson's so bullish on him.
That's a story we're going to be talking about throughout this season. I got to spend a few minutes on Shohei, though, before we let you go. And what do you think happened yesterday? I mean, he spoke. He certainly went on the offensive. He didn't answer questions. Yeah. What do you make of it?
I think he told the version of the story that we are going to hear from him going forward. And if it wasn't clear already from Tisha Thompson's reporting, then I think it is abundantly clear now. He is painting himself in this case as a victim. And if the facts, as he laid them out, are indeed true, then he was. You know, the way that Shohei Ohtani talked about Ipe Mitsuhara, that he was more than his interpreter. He was a confidant. He was a brother. He was a seminal figure in his life. And then to say, essentially, he betrayed me and stole, you know, Shohei Ohtani didn't use a number. The number that we've printed is $4.5 million. So it's a lot of money, and it's a huge breach of trust. And, you know, I keep hearing from people who are skeptical about the story, and skepticism in this case with the story changing the way that it did is entirely warranted. But the skepticism about how could he have access to money like this? I think it looks past the idea that Ipe Mitsuhara was so much more for Shohei Ohtani than just an interpreter, and that it is not beyond the realm of possibility that he did have access to a bank account that had that kind of money.
What questions do you want the answers to?
I would like to know, to whom did Ohtani's people refer a criminal, not complaint, but criminal activity? So what agency did they reach out to?
Why?
I would like to know, because if, listen.
Because Tisha said, it's funny, Tisha Thompson said the exact same thing when I asked her that on, what was it, Thursday or Friday last week. And I was surprised that was her answer. It was your answer also. Why is that so important?
It's important because I think it goes to the veracity of Ohtani's story. If you are alleging a massive theft, Mike, and then you're not following up with criminal authorities on this massive theft, then, I mean, how do we know that the massive theft even happened at that point? What that does is that validates Ohtani's version of the story because it opens him up to scrutiny when investigators are looking into the details of what actually happened.
That makes sense.
Beyond that, I would love to know the very granular details of what happened between the clubhouse meeting where Ibe Michihara stood up in front of the Dodgers team and talked about how he had a gambling problem and how Shohei was helping him out, and exactly how and when it dawned on Ohtani that, okay, something's a little fishy here. Who did he talk with? How did they discuss it? And how did it get to the point where the Dodgers fired Michihara? And, you know, this is a much larger point, but I would just like to know where all of this fits into this expansive federal investigation into an alleged illegal bookmaker and where that fits among all of the other players involved. That's the sort of thing that I think is going to take a long, long time to piece together. And it's why this story is just in the beginning. You know, we have Ohtani's version at this point, but getting authorities' version as well, because they have all of the things that we as reporters don't. They have subpoena power. They have the ability to compel witnesses to testify in a case. And they have that under the penalty of perjury. When you have those levers, you are far likelier to get the full truth than anything that reporters can be told. You know, we're talking with as many people as possible and trying to piece together the details and get a greater sense of what actually happened. But, you know, sometimes as reporters, we're told stories and we do our very best to verify them before we put them into print. And that's what we're doing right now and what we're going to continue to do.
Last thing for me, Jeffrey, in 7 days, we'll talk to you again. We will have 5 Mariners games under our belt against the Red Sox and others. What headlines, what stories would we love to hear as Mariner fans over those first 5 games?
That they're 5-0.
Boom. Speak it.
Well, that's very simple.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great.
That's not a storyline. That's just great, like an that's answer.
That's a great way to end a pass. Thank you. Appreciate you.
That's it.
Ask a better question.
All right.
I take no responsibility for my brother over here. He asks fine. What he asks. I got nothing on that. I got 1 or 2 more minutes with you though. I don't want to end just yet. And I know this is probably not like the biggest story on a lot of people's radar right now, but I think it's going to end up as one, and that's what's happening with the union. We had Evan Drellick on last week, and he kind of gave us his update on what he thinks is going on. What do you make of this story of what's happening with the union?
It's been fascinating to me. And for those unfamiliar, there was essentially a challenge to Major League Baseball Players Association leadership led by Harry Marino, who was the 33-year-old lawyer who organized and eventually helped unionize minor league players. So this is not like some backbencher making a power play. Like, this is somebody who's been involved in these sorts of things and believed that the union was poorly run and that change needed to be had. And what happened ended up fracturing the union pretty well, which is like music to Major League Baseball's ears, 2.5 years away from a collective bargaining agreement. And the ultimate upshot of this is that Tony Clark, the longtime executive director, is going to remain in his role. There's still questions about Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator, who Marino had proposed essentially taking his job over. But ultimately, what this does is it forces the MLBPA to get its you-know-what together over the next year plus before these collective bargaining agreement talks begin, because let's not forget, there was a 99-day lockout in 2021, and we were very close to having a season that was in peril. And when you have the frustration with the free agent market that you have among a large number of players from this off season, that's the sort of stuff that tends to embolden a group of players. And the fact that these players' leadership has been weakened at this point only makes the likelihood, I fear, of an even longer work stoppage greater. And I hate to say that. I wish that were not the case, but already there had been rumblings behind the scenes of something that's going to be more extended than last time. Now, we don't know until the talks begin. Like, that's an important thing to note. Like, this is a long way away, and things can happen between now and then that change that. But the frustration of players is palpable at this point, and Major League Baseball has done a really good job in collective bargaining talks over the last two decades, really wresting control from the union, and the union wants to grab it back.
It's going to be an interesting story. We'll keep talking about it maybe a little bit almost every week, Jeff, but thank you. We're glad we have you back for another season. I'm sorry that I called you John Morosi earlier. I'm sure that you will find a way to be more pessimistic as time goes on. We count on you for it.
No doubt.
Yes, good.
I'm sorry you couldn't answer my hard question. That's okay. Maybe next time. I know it's our first show of the year. We'll get there. Appreciate you passing.
All right. Jeff?
It's my pleasure, Brock. I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate the effort. And I know next time I come on that the shame of this moment will cause you to ask better questions.
It'll be better.
I feel like this is a motivating factor, and that's what Coach is here for, buddy.
Hey, did you read Tim Britton's story today?
Goodbye, Jeffrey. We got to go.
Where he came up with all the former teams that have a pathway to success for current ones?
I did not.
Read it. It's pretty cool. I think you'll find it interesting. And then maybe, you'll do something creative like that. And then we'll be able to talk to you about it instead. There's Jeff Passan. He joins us every Tuesday at 8:30 here on Brock and Salk. And generally some shots and barbs fired. I'm sure Jeff will get me back. I got the last word today. He'll get me back next week, I'm sure. Yeah. All right. From baseball off to football, because it is time for Brock's draft profile every day. At 9 o'clock, giving you a Seahawk, a future Seahawk, somebody that fits with who Brock thinks would work here in Seattle. Stick around. You'll hear number 19 on this list next. I'm Brock and Salk.